Geez, practicing in Noe Valley, San Francisco at Noe Integrated Health. And I'll give you her website. It's http://www.vardahome.com. And in addition to her private practice, Varda provides homeopathic care for women with cancer at the Charlotte Maxwell Complementary Clinic. And she does mentoring there on homeopathy. She supervises and mentors homeopathic practitioners. She's treating patients with cancer. And she's, it looks like you've got a lot of books here, publications. And In the Ring of Fire, Challenges and Lessons in Homeopathic Practice. And site, and that covers the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation for cancer. And lymphoma, parotid cancer, is that how you pronounce it? And breast cancer. Also right up in California Homeopath, which is awesome. And do you want to go on to your education?
This is Jackie Wilson. I'm signing in.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hello, Jackie.
We're getting ready to talk to Varda.
Uh-huh. Great.
Okay. So, and education, she had Pacific Academy Homeopathy, San Francisco.
I'm Varda.
Hello.
Hi, this is Varda from Baltimore.
Welcome.
Hi, how are you? Welcome.
Good, thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Roxanne from Madison, New Jersey.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank
Hi,
you.
This is Umangani.
Yeah, so we've started the recording, and we've introduced Varda. So we'd like to continue.
Okay. We're going through Varda's education as Pacific Academy Homeopathy in San Francisco, 2002, Hahnemann College, Point Richmond, California. And then Varda's continuing education includes training in cancer treatment, of particular interest in her studies with Rajan Sankaran, Ramakrishnakun, and Jaya Shah, Suji Chattery, and Banerjee Protocol, so which is it's awesome, awesome. And so, Varda, are you ready to talk to us about the Charlotte Maxwell Clinic?
Yes, I'm ready. Do you want to greet people that just came in on the phone? I heard clicks. You want to? Go ahead, Varda. Greet the people. Okay, I'm talking. Yeah, okay. I want to talk about Charlotte Maxwell, first of all, as a clinic and what drew me to there. And then we'll talk about how I handle the cases and how I handle the class, whereas the other cases. My goal today is not to go over what remedies are being used, but I'll touch on what type of protocol is used and why, when it is used and why. So first of all, we'll go back to the clinic. The clinic, the name is Charlotte Maxwell Complementary Clinic, and nobody knows why it's called Charlotte Maxwell. It sounds like a name of a person, and it is a name of a person. Charlotte Maxwell was a local woman in Northern California. She had cancer, and toward the end of her life, she benefited from CAM treatment, complementary and alternative, and she was very grateful, and she felt that all women should get that. After she died, some of the people who treated her and her friends initiated creating Charlotte Maxwell Complementary Clinic, following her thoughts and being inspired by her. And that the clinic was founded about 24 years ago. To say something about the clinic, they have all modalities, homeopaths, acupuncture, Western herbs, Chinese herbs, aquatic massage, I cannot mention everything, and more. The volunteers are extremely supported by the organization. the organization is a non-profit, and it works real well, in the sense that if there are any problems up in the administration, it doesn't trickle down to the clinicians because they take care of themselves. Their job is to make it work, and they make it work. I've seen many nonprofits, and I am very impressed by how smooth. There are 650 clients at the moment and 400 volunteers. So you can see the ratio is very high between volunteers and clients. Two clinics are in San Francisco and in Oakland. I started with the clinic is because I was very interested in especially when...
Excuse me, can we all mute ourselves because of the background noise, which is *6, and then you can unmute yourself for the question. Okay, Varda.
Okay, yeah. The reason I stopped working with Charles Maxwell is because I was, first of all, I was interested in chronic disease that modern medicine does not have an answer to. And cancer it is. And the other motivation is that I don't take homeopathy where it is not welcome. We all know that. And homeopathy is very welcome to Charles Maxwell. I'm there.
I wonder if it's your phone, Varda.
I don't touch anything. I'm going to do... now it's gone. Okay.
Moscow.
Now I can't hear Varda at all.
I'm not talking.
Can everyone please mute their phone? There's some background noise and it's hard to hear.
Okay. I go on. Yeah. The process of starting working at the clinic is, number one, you have to finish school. They're very professional. They will not recruit any practitioner unless they're professional. So once you finish school, you apply, you get an interview, you go through training, which is a full weekend, and then you can start working. They're in services periodically, to learn about cancer and cancer treatments, and this is an ongoing thing. The atmosphere at the clinic is very welcoming. The location of the clinic is not in a medical building. It doesn't feel like a clinic. It's in a office building, and when you walk in, there is a shift coordinator who handles the files, gets you scheduled, gets your files ready for you, give you name tag, etc. But the nice thing is that the waiting room is not like a formal waiting room. It's more like a lounge, and people sit there. It's a nice place to sit, have conversation, eat snack, which is organic food, have a cup of tea. This is just very often I come out to call the next client and people jump and say, oh, we're talking about you. So they share information about the clinic with each other, which is in a very nice way. When it comes to treating the clients, there are actually two diseases that we are dealing with, that we're faced with. One is chemotherapy and one is cancer. 90% of the clients had been through chemotherapy. In chemotherapy, some people glide through the treatment like nobody's business, and some have extreme side effects. It can last weeks, months, or sometimes years. I've seen somebody from following 8 years of chemotherapy, that's many years to suffer. So when I work with a case, I separate between what's acute, what is the result of the chemo, and what is the cancer. And you basically have to treat what's in front of you. It's a delicate dance between the two, because sometimes, occasionally, after you work with a client for a while, it may converge. The side effect and the constitutional remedy are one. It doesn't happen very often, but there's a real grace when it happens. What we do most, however, is listening, because you can imagine people come out of the, one of my clients call it the C factory. You are diagnosed with cancer, they being sent to go here and there and have all those protocols done for them, and it's not a simple place to be, and they don't have much support while going through that factory. So when people come see us, they need to be listened to, and they deserve to be listened to. And sometimes this is the best we can do. We need to remember that we're healers, not technicians. Collecting symptoms, the repertory, is a very technical act, which is very important to our work. However, what comes before is the listening part. I sometimes jokingly I tell myself, "Oh, I did this, the Kahneman. He did not have repertory. You listen so well, you know the remedy." I think this doesn't happen very often, but it's true when it does. So I want to present one example of somebody who came to see me, a woman in her 80s. And I listened to her, and after a few minutes I realized I'm not going to have a chance to ask any questions just because of the way she's talking. Much energy in her talk. Very motivated to be talking. She knows she has a lot to say. By the way, she never went through chemo. She just did surgery. So she didn't have the chemo side effects. But I listened to her a lot. And I thought, just relax, just listen. You don't have to collect symptoms. Maybe you'll see her again and then you'll get remedy. Okay, I resigned to be a listener, a good listener. So I listened to her, and at the end, I collected my notes in my mind, and I cannot read my notes. I do take notes when I see clients, but I cannot read my notes or go to the computer, forget it. But I remember I've heard her saying, burning sensation twice. I heard it say excessive diarrhea once, and I thought this was the energy in which she talked. I'm going to send her home with sulfur. Maybe it's not 100% correct, maybe not correct at all, but there is definitely sulfur in her. I sent her home with that. She comes back a month later, and she tells me that she cleaned up her house a little bit. Yeah, tell me about your house. I live in a museum. I have so much stuff, I cannot throw anything away. Uh-huh, okay. So forth. And I thought, I saw her every month, and I realized this is her constitutional remedy. And it's a grace that I came up with it on the first time. Later on, a few months later, she told me that her ADD had been improved a great deal, and I did not know that she had ADD. She didn't mention that. And she said to me, "I've been seeing the psychiatrist 10 years. That's how she talks. 10 years. 10 years I've been talking to him. And then I get this one little white pill, and look, everything is better." this was a huge acknowledgement of how the remedy improved her life. Not about what initial complaint, diarrhea, whatever she had at the beginning, but I really like to hear that her mental state had been improved. And she didn't even complain because she was so used to have that. She always had it from a young age. Another thing she told me when I saw her first and I put it on the back burner was that, remember, she was 80 when I'm talking to her. As a child, she remembered her father who had syphilis. And she remembered him on the late stage when he didn't talk. He was sitting there. And late, you know, I've been working with her for 2 years, giving her sulfur increase, the dosage sometime, or change. I put it in water so she know how to control how many times to succuss it, how much water to add. I was working with her, and she had a good sense of what the remedy is doing for her. But after a couple of years, the sulfur stopped being effective. And I thought, you know, my asthma, I have to treat her my asthmatically. Many people treat my asthmatically right from the beginning to open the case, but I just deal with what's in front of me. So the miasm may come later. In her case, it came later, and nothing, the remedy didn't do anything, and I thought maybe I need to take a step to the side and give her the cephalinum, and it's not based on symptoms that she manifested, but by the story she told me, but her history. So I did that. She had humongous aggravation, and she told me later on, and I said, I'm sorry about the aggravation. She said, no, sorry. She said, I wouldn't have it any other way. She's such a good client, you know, it's like a dream client. It's like, I wouldn't have it any other way. Because later on, everything got better. So she knew, she really had a good sense of what aggravation means. So this is an example of prescribing before repertorizing. Later on when I repertorized, of course, sulfur was there to just justify my action. Also, I like to type the case and put in bold letters the chapter, so that when I see the clients for follow-up, I can pick up the chapter right away and ask them if they don't bring it up on their own. I like to go over each to see if there's any symptoms in other areas. So as I said before, I all of the above. I use constitutional remedy, my asthmatic remedy. I go with protocols when appropriate. When appropriate, especially for the type of client it is. Not everyone can do the Ramakrishnan, the lute, and Sakash. So it takes a special person, and you need to match not just the client with the remedy, but also the potency and the way we deliver it. Banerjee protocol is very... how can you say, it's a gift, but again, I have to clean out what's in front first. If people have complained up front, I have to clean it before I go to a protocol. The protocol relating directly to the cancer, and I've used it very successfully with some clients, but it's not always the front approach. Another thing that going on in the clinic is we have to deal with two things, basically. First of all, everybody is on a lot of medication. So we need to consider that when we decide how to prescribe. If they take medicine every day, and many of them have 7, 8, 9 medications a day, they cannot sleep, so they sleep medication and so on and so on. So I need to give the remedy in such dose or potency that they have to take it every day to undo. It's like writing with a pencil and somebody comes with an eraser, erasing this. So we need to keep up with the medication. And the other thing is the everybody seeing all what's available. The clients are categorized in terms of if they have a cancer on level 1, stage 1, 2, 3, 4, then they can see they have more appointments. So if they have 4 appointments a month, they probably go, and no, probably they go see other practitioners. They see acupuncture, and we're taught that we don't want our clients to see other practitioners, and I think that comes from our ignorance, our lack of knowledge, not ignorance, lack of knowledge, because we want to assess what did the remedy do, but if they went to the acupuncturist, we don't know if they changed it because of the acupuncture treatment or the remedy and so forth. So I had an interesting experience with a client that she had very severe neuropathy. The expression of their neuropathy was lack of sensation in her hands. Sometimes it expressed itself as a lot of pain, sometimes in the feet. People say they feel like they're stepping on a broken glass, which is very serious, very uncomfortable. But lack of sensation, you cannot pick up an item, it falls out of your hand. Because the sensation is how the nerves register holding something and telling the muscle how to react, to hold stronger or less, to apply pressure. So that was her complaint, and I think I saw her for a year and a half before I was finally able to pinpoint on a remedy, which was really great for her. What happened was that mainly the remedies I gave her opened the gate. I don't know. After a year and a half, she had the first time she had a dream. Could be the lack of dreams due to medication. I don't know. Not remembering dreams. It's a symptom, but it's not always that helpful. So once she had a dream, I pinpoint on a remedy that I would not see any other way. It was Optisia. It's not important because a neuropathy has many remedies. So I'm not saying that this is the right remedy for any neuropathy. But when I saw her the next time, she was very nice, always very nice. She is very nice. And she always say, oh, the remedy was so great. And so she tell me the remedy was fantastic. And I tell her, we don't need to be polite to the remedy. I want the truth. She said, no. I mean it. I had pain in my hands. I said, what's so good about pain? And she say, I did not feel anything for so long. So feeling a little pain in the hand is a good sign. Yes, that's true. So we kept on going on. I gave her the remedy to the point where she knew she would consciously say, I need the remedy stronger because it was good and now it's not being effective anymore. So she also developed relations with the remedy. She really could draw the line between the symptoms and the remedy. That's really nice when it happens. Later on, she tells me on an appointment that she had acupuncture. And while she was on the table, while the needles were in, she had a melting sensation in her hands, just like she got when she first started with the remedy for the neuropathy. But that sensation went away when the needles came out. And she experienced that the needles and the remedies are walking in the same directions. And I thought this is a great gift. I never spoke with the acupuncture, but her analysis led her to do work that opened the gate in the same way that the remedy did. And so that is, it's a great lesson. It's a great, very gratifying to work with other modalities and to know that we walk in the same direction. I'm looking at my notes. Give me a second. I also say a few words about volunteering at the clinic again. They teach us, they give us in-service about different chemo, about cancer. Not everything really helps the homeopath to do the work, but you need to know so much about cancer and about chemo. That's the reality. One symptom that we always have to use when clients have side effects from chemotherapy is abuse of allopathic medicine, because that's exactly what's going on with them. It's not that they abused. Somebody gave them. Somebody abused them. I don't know what's the right term. They're being exposed to a lot of very toxic stuff. How toxic? In one in-service we had, she's a nurse oncologist. She delivered the toxin in a needle to the clients, to the patients. She said that they put red dye in the concoction. Because they have to be extremely careful, because if it will touch them, it will melt their skin, the nurses. It will make a hole. That's how toxic it is. And she showed us picture. To me, I try not to go there, but I cannot help thinking that in all time when the reason Heinemann left medicine is because he disagreed with the mercury treatment that the patients were getting. And it's very similar. So, again, I resist being negative, but we know a lot of funds went into cancer treatment. But there's no solution in the horizon. Cancer is different than any other malady by the fact that it is mimicking us. It multiplies cells. And this is how any organism procreate and thrive. We do it, animals do it, all animals and plants. And cancer does it. So there was a reason why it was, it is labeled the emperor of maladies. It's the king. We cannot do anything so far. My hope is with Banerjee protocol, and actually it is it is good news for all of us that medical center in Houston agreed to test it, and they divide their patient into two groups, those who go through the conventional and go the allopathic protocol, and those who do only the conventional treatment. And they see some results. And Banerjee also was wise to call it Ruta 9. It sounds like a name of a medicine. If somebody told us, use Ruta 9, we would say, 9 what? 9 doesn't mean anything. Is it X? Is it C? What, you know? 9M. But it sounds, almost speaking their language. Maybe something will come in through the back door and we'll see something resulting in a good way. What else do I need to say?
Oh, hi, Mom.
Hi,
oh,
baby.
Oh, crack right there.
I also want to add that as the mentor for the homeopathic modality at the clinic, I am teaching a class, the homeopaths who work at the clinic. I supervise the cases, but not really telling them what to do. Just the case being emailed to all of us, we all have to read, think about it. I may give them advice. I will not give them the remedy. Also, it is most likely the only prescribing before they came to class. And then we go over follow-ups later on. And I'm very pleased to see that students who have been coming back, I see improvement. I see that their approach is kind of open up to the issues that counselor presents. It's nothing new, yet there's different ways that we go about it. All the cancer rubrics are in the repertory. They are. I printed all the rubrics, and it was 28 pages without sub rubrics. So there's a lot of information. If we don't get scared, and we just settle down and we collect ourselves to do the work, we can do a lot of work just looking in the repertory. So all the protocols that are floating around are not quote-unquote original, which is good. We don't want to be original. We want to go with the classic because it is classical homeopathy. So this is good. The information is there for us to dig in. Gracefully, the cases that come from the clinic can be submitted to CHC, so that's very nice. I was concerned that if they say no, it will be counterproductive, because somebody who wants to be a good homeopath, they come to the cancer clinic, they work so hard, they should be able to submit the cases, and this is the case, they can submit the cases. Granted, they do the work. So this is a good thing, yeah? Another thing that makes it easy to work in the clinic is that we see a client and we may hear things that do not relate to homeopathy, but are very, very important in the life of the client. If there are any issue of such as housing, food, not enough money, safety, we make a referral to the social worker, and they make a contact. I usually ask permission from the client to say, can I please make a referral? Usually they're very happy, they say yes. But I don't want them to get a phone call and say, who told you? Because it's confidential, but the bottom line, they talk to me. The clinic is telling us, we are the eyes and ears of the clinic. You might be the only one who sees that patient that day. So you're responsible to be proactive and do other things besides just prescribe a remedy. We need to remember that we are healers, not technicians. Because the you know, prescribing the remedy, sometimes it's a very technical, mechanical step to do the search for the right rubric and for the remedies. But we need to remember that we're more than that. What else? The clinic has drivers. They go pick up the clients, if need be. They have translators in any language, and I've been sitting with a translator more than once, and sometime after two or three times, the clients say, I don't need a translator. It's interesting, they're comfortable enough to speak to me directly with other somebody who speaks their language. It says something about their comfort zone. It happened a few times, and I think that's commendable that people reach this safety zone. At the end of each shift. We have shift meeting. All of us have been working that shift. Shift is about 4 hours, either morning or afternoon. We sit together in the conference room and we go over the cases we've seen that day. And sometime I hear from other practitioners their opinion about the client, and it's very helpful. Maybe this is something else. So it's worth the time to sit and listen to what other practitioners say, different modalities. And also, when we first see a client, we get the file with the FET file. Everybody charts what they see, what they do, including the homeopaths. And I find it very interesting to read the report of the social worker, because sometimes I talk to a client, they don't say anything about depression. I ask them, everything is fine, but when I read the notes, not only depression, but what makes you feel better? What do you do? So I go talk to friends, or I stay home alone, and this is information is very helpful to us. To read and say, oh, the class never told me that. So there. So we can get help from different directions, and we should use all of that at the clinic. I think I've said everything I had to say. Any questions?
So you can unmute your phone by pressing *6 for questions. Do you have any questions?
If the student, this is Aaron, if the student were interested in working at either the San Francisco or the Oakland clinic, how would they contact someone to do that? Would it be on their website or contact you, or is there a contact name?
Yeah, you can go on their website. I can also give you the phone number right now. The phone number is 510-601-4871.
Okay. And someone there will at the clinic will answer that it's not you directly, or
you can talk to volunteer services. Another number. Yeah, 510-601-7660.
All righty.
This is Jackie. I was just wondering, could you spell out Varda's website?
You want me to
HTTP so on, but www.varda.
Home, H-O-M-E.
H-O-M-E?
Mm-hmm.
.com?
Yeah.
Okay. And on your website, do you have a list of the books that you've written? Or?
It's not books, it's articles.
Oh, more on the articles? Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have the website for the Charlotte Maxwell at www.charlottemaxwell.org?
Do you need the website?
Aaron's got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can repeat that website if you need it.
Sure.
Okay, www.charlottemaxwell.org.
Okay.
Well, with double L and Charlotte with double T.
Okay, thank you. How long have you been working at the clinic,
About 10 years.
About 10 years.
Yeah.
So you've seen it evolve. Has it evolved much over the 10 years since you've been there, or were you one of the first homeopaths to work there, or?
They've been doing it for 24 years, so when I came in, it was already very much in place. It was evolved. I don't think the clinic was evolved, but the modality was evolved. You know, homeopathy is a bit different modality than any other thing. It's not a table. It's not a massage or acupuncture. We have different needs. So we address our needs and they respond. So in the past few years, we got our own office. We have our own pharmacy, which is growing. Michael Quinn from Heinemann Lab, who passed away some years ago, offered three remedies for Charles Maxwell. Whatever, isn't it wonderful? So whatever we need, we call and they send it.
Oh, my goodness.
This is, it is my goodness. It's big goodness, yeah. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, very nice, yeah. So when we have a list of remedies, so all the practitioners know what remedies we have in each clinic, so I should be able to, if I walk at my office on a case and I know that when I go in I want to have all the remedies that repertorize what I gave them in the past, I want to have the same remedy, I want to have a higher potency of the same, I want to have the remedies that are like on the printout next week, because I don't know, I want to be ready to be able to give them whatever I need to give them, so I can actually what I have, and if not, I have plenty of remedies. I can take a few with me. So I'm not shy of doing that. So so this is how we evolved. The modality evolved, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the clinic really responsive to what we ask.
Wow.
Other questions?
Yes. Have you ever worked for ovarian cancer patients?
What?
Have you ever helped ovarian cancer?
Yes, ovarian cancer, yeah.
Do you use sarcodes for them, or do you use basically a constitutional treatment?
Oh, as I said earlier, I use all of the above. It depends, you know, you need to assess the situation. Maybe you probably need more than one remedy because the cancer cells multiply and you need to match up the same speed. You need to move, to give multiple remedies, you need to give it often. So it's not just one thing and you walk away from it and see you next month.
Right. So I am working with a holistic cancer doctor. He's a CAM doctor too. So I get patients from him, which I try to help them with symptomatic relief. But I have had few cases where I was not even able to help them symptomatically. Because the ovarian cancer spreaded to the colon and great omentum and had adenocarcinoma. So there was no classic symptom of ovarian cancer, but it was more of GI symptoms, explosive diarrhea and stuff like that. So I was just wondering, like, how do you just, how if you had a case like that, how would you work with them?
You always go to the original source of cancer. If it was ovarian to begin with and then metastasized to other areas, it's the ovarian cancer moving on. So you need to address that.
And do you give lower potencies?
Low potency, I really low potency But also you talk about GI, so you need to address the GI. So it's multiple remedies going on.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Who? Oh my God, what's that?
A dead hedgehog.
Can somebody mute their phone? We're getting a lot of background noise right now. Thank you. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh. Any other questions for Varda? Varda, I'm going to stop the recording right now, but we can continue talking if there's offline, if there's any further questions.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.